Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is the Techno Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, cook it, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Joy 94.9. This is Techno Gaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, and technology. My name is Mark, and in the studio today, it's a bit of a common thread this week.
You're calling us common?
I don't know. That's a bad thing. Michael, hello.
Ohayo gozaimasu. That was good morning for our Japanese listeners, or listener.
We know there's at least one.
There's one. Yes. Hello. And Raina, hello.
G'day.
Have you got a language to say Buonetto or something?
Konnichiwa? No?
Yeah.
That works.
We should go multilingual. Every week we should say hello in a new language.
Guten Morgen.
Ooh. Hoi Morgen.
Yes. That's as far as I can go. That's my year 8 German right there. But we are here to talk about technology all the goings on in the latest tech news.
And we always seem to think, but it's been another big week, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, we were a bit worried again, but there has been a few new things popping up this week.
We knew
week.
About one certain thing that was coming up.
Yes. Raina and I are having a bit of a bond moment right now because of our affinity towards a certain fruit.
A fruit-flavoured computer company.
But yeah, and of course that's made a bit of news this week. iOS 7 was released for iPhones and for iPads as well.
I've heard of iOS before. I don't know what it is though.
It's a OS for apples, I guess. There's truth in that, isn't it?
Yes. I don't
know. What else are we talking about today? We're talking about TPG. Now, TPG is obviously an internet provider here, one of the larger ones here in Australia, and they're murmuring about what they're going to do with the new government and their approach to the NBN and how they might be offering fibre to premises, but only to certain areas.
Mm, and they're pretty much all apartments as well, aren't they?
Mm,
so sorry if you're out in the burbs in a nice quarter acre.
Cherry picking is the word, and we'll be discussing that later on. What else are we talking about today? We're talking about some sad news, the death of former Nintendo president Hiroshi Hamauchi. Did I pronounce
Hiroshi
that right?
Hiroshi Yamauchi.
Right, okay.
It's all right, he won't complain.
Yeah. Now, a couple of new products, including the Leap Motion, which is a pretty nifty little device. It's if you think Kinect, but a much smaller version of the Kinect. So,
and for your computer.
It's actually being built into a new HP laptop. So there's some
and much cheaper too.
Mm-hmm. BlackBerry rates are mentioned this week.
Yeah,
a couple of mentions.
The company formerly known as RIM. Now known as BB. No, BlackBerry.
That's BlackBerry.
Oh, that's awful. That is awful. They're slashing workforce. They're temporarily suspending share prices and that sort of thing. So it's some news there. Telco news as well. Away from TPG, Telstra have been wrapped over the knuckles by ACMA. this week.
Mm.
And we're going abroad as well on the telco front. A company called Belgacom has been owned by Prism.
Yes.
Apparently. And last but not least, 3D printing.
Yay, are we going to do it?
Oh, I think so. If I say it now, we have to do it.
All right, okay, good.
Now, of course, you can text us. You can contact us while we're in the studio here. You can do so by texting us 0427JOY949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au and you can tweet us.
At TECHNOGAZE.
Yes.
Ooh, ooh.
We've also got a Facebook presence as well. We have a page up there called Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
And we'll put some photos and maybe a little bit of video up on that later on.
Yes. We had the privilege of using someone's iPhone 5S with 120 frames per second camera on it, which does some remarkable slow motion, right?
It makes me wish I'd worn something different today, I'd say.
We will block faces.
No, I think we should.
No,
leave me one.
I don't think it's my face that's the problem. Is that what you're saying?
I will stop talking before I dig a deeper hole.
That's right. Let's move on to some news now. TPG is to test competition law by offering current wholesale fibre infrastructure to retail customers. Now, TPG are looking to offer fibre to 500,000 apartment dwellers in Australia's major cities. Now, the NBN laws introduced by the Labor government, previous Labor government, stipulate that such a move must coincide with the telco providing the same infrastructure as what's called a level 2 wholesale service as well. And they've got a price at wholesale service at the same price as what NBN Co. will offer it as. So there's no sort of competitiveness in there.
Yeah, they're not undercutting the national provider, basically.
Mm. So the move is reported to be in response to the coalition's more business-friendly approach to the anti-cherry-picking wars of the NBN.
One of the good things about the NBN is basically it was subsidising the internet for those people where it was going to be more expensive to install it against the places where it was cheaper. So that's why there was the flat rate. And, of course, installing fibre into a very densely populated area is going to be a lot cheaper than having to pull it into, you know, a farm or something like that.
Yes. A bit more bang for your buck there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I guess TPG are testing the waters to see, I wonder what the government of today is going to do when we start trying to do that.
Mm. And, of course, they're in a good position as well because they've got fibre already rolled out to a lot of the larger cities, the inner city locations, because they're offering fibre services to business companies, business customers already, right?
Yep.
So the infrastructure is there for them. It makes sense that they can, you know, if you just purely look at it at an infrastructure level, it should be relatively easy to offer the same service to retail customers.
And if TPG are successful in this, I wonder what some of the other telcos are going to do. Because, you know, UECOM, for instance, have got a fairly large fibre network that is strung up on the power poles, and they could easily provide that to residences and other businesses.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's testing the waters. I mean, it's just 1 week into the new government, and, of course, this is sort of, you know, interesting news, to say the least. It'll be interesting as well because actually, hours after their first announcement that they'd start offering this service, they immediately responded with, oh, by the way, we're going to cap it at 25 megabits per second, which is the coalition's speed, top speed for their version of the NBN, or their, I think it's the at least speed or something like that. I didn't quite get into the detail of that particular part of the policy. But they're basically saying, okay, Labor's NBN was 100 megabits per second. Ours will be 25 megabits per second as standard.
Yeah, isn't that also partly to get them out of the law at the moment that says, well, if it's not really competing with that 100 megabits per second offering that could be there, then why not just go ahead and cherry pick, because it won't be the same.
And I would have thought that it's a good move on TPG's part, because they can sign up all these customers.
Mm.
Then when the law becomes more friendly, as in, you know, maybe Malcolm Turnbull introduces legislation, then they can simply just take that cap off, like just by, you know, flicking a switch or
it's a programming setting, and we will upgrade you to 100 meg for only X dollars more.
Oh, yeah. Is that all?
Yeah.
Ah.
Wouldn't you like an extra 75?
The other aspect of this is that it's unlikely that the coalition are going to be able to change any actual laws until July next year because of the Senate.
That buys them a lot of time to you know, start mucking around with networks and, you know, installing things.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in a pretty regional area, and I've got to say, I don't feel pretty great about it. I've got to say, it doesn't feel good to feel like the regions are going to get screwed.
Yeah.
As it were.
Yeah, and that was one of the points of the Labor Party. In their position, they wanted to offer equal access to all Australians, to 97%. It would be the same level of service. The remaining 3% would get what is physically possible, which is more like a satellite service or a wireless service. But at least, you know, they best efforts as far as the technology could take them. So it's a bit unfortunate that already, like within 1 week of a new government, we're starting to see the downside of that.
Mm.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. Michael Rayner and myself, Mark, in with you today, and we'll cover some more technology news in a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
That's right, you're listening to TechnoGaze on the gayest station in the nation, Joy 94.9. We're covering technology here on the show, and one major news item this week, or one major event that occurred this week. I'm flailing my hands in the air.
I'm about to leave the studio.
iOS 7,
yay.
The iPhone 5S and 5C.
That's right. And that was one of the bigger parts of it, wasn't it? The 5S and the 5C, the colourful...
Colourful.
iPhone.
And not so cheap.
Not so cheap, yeah.
And you can legitimately give your phone the finger.
That's exactly right.
Which we saw earlier on today, and it works really, really well.
Yes, it didn't falsely identify yourself or myself as being the owner of the phone. Which
that's right.
That's right.
Test successful. But, so that was part of it, was the fingerprint scanner that's been introduced as the 5S.
That's right.
And as usual, with every new phone that gets released by Apple, there's massive shortages of all the phones that people actually want.
That's right. And we've heard now from two different sources that there are actually no champagne.
Champagne.
there are no gold phones.
I wonder if that's a trademark, isn't it, by a certain region of France?
Yeah.
Hopefully we don't get in trouble for
there are the no Méthode sparkling, Champenois. There are no sparkling white phones.
That's right. Yes.
No, and we're obviously pretty excited about that particular colour last week. So how disappointed I was to hear that there were none in the country.
Well, I think I'm going to wait for this one. I mean, it's kind of getting a bit old, isn't it? The new release of the phone. Drop another couple of, you know, years of commitment or a couple of hundred dollars for the actual phone? It's just a bit... It's become a bit old, hasn't it? Speaking from an Apple fanboy's point of view, right?
I think 2 years is I mean, again, it's spot on, right? You're either always ahead of your mates so that you can feel really good, or you are just behind your mates so you can feel like you need to catch up with the next phone.
Mm.
It's that weird sort of little two-year cycle. I'm one of those people that doesn't believe in the contract, so I've actually paid for my phone outright.
Mm.
So I'm feeling even less like I want to upgrade my phone at the moment because I've only had it for not even 10 months.
Yeah, right. It's one of those... It's a very sort of interesting psychological process. Like, because when I first... When the announcement about the 5S came out, I was, fingerprint scanner and some motion... CPU included in the phone.
Improved camera.
Improved camera as well. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't really care about those features so much. But then I actually watched the announcement, the video, and I was like, wow. You know, it's one of those things
you need to win. It's almost like they were selling it to you.
You really get sucked into that whole, you know, Apple mindset once you actually see them talk about it. And this is the first time that I've actually observed that in myself, that I've kind of seen, well, you know, because I had that period of 2 days or whatever where I didn't watch it, and it's just like, oh yeah, whatever. And then actually seeing it, it's sort of, it really highlighted the fact that just by seeing that announcement made a bit of a difference.
Yeah,
I would get it for the fingerprint reader. After seeing it in action and seeing how quick it is, yeah, that is fantastic. To know that you can unlock your phone very quickly and securely,
yes,
makes the whole device that much usable. Because I hate, you know, having to key in either your PIN code or put a pattern on your phone. This way you just put your finger on the button and it unlocks. You don't even have to look at the screen.
Is this actually the very definition of first world problem right there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, no. I'm saving a second at least on tapping in my code.
Well, by the amount of time I pull my phone out of my pocket and just, you know, happen to want to test, you know, look at what updates are occurring. Like, I'm such a Gen Y-er, it's not funny when it comes to my phone. Maybe it will save me hours over the course of my existence.
It might, on a very superficial sort of counting numbers level, but really, will it improve your life? It's like that whole Samsung thing with, you know, the face. Was it Samsung that did the facial recognition on the Galaxy?
Yes, the
so you could hold it up to your head.
Which doesn't work,
exactly.
I saw people actually trying to demonstrate it to me once, and it was, you know, they had to move their entire head up and down.
Yes.
And, like, I'm doing it with the microphone, and that's how annoying it is right now.
And trying to use your fingers to make the screen scroll, you end up flapping your hands in the air and doesn't work.
Yes, but no, one other event that occurred this week as well is related to the new phone is, of course, iOS 7.
Listeners, if you are already on iOS 7, it might be interesting if you send us a little text or send us a little tweet to tell us what you think.
But it might be a case of, if you're not on iOS 7, let us know, because hasn't everybody upgraded?
Well, everyone who could upgrade it.
Yes. It was a bit difficult. There was some problems actually getting the update in the first place. Like, people have reported slow downloads, and also some problems in migrating to iOS 7. You have to actually reactivate your iMessage service, for example, if you're using iMessage for communication with other iPhone users, and that service was not working very well as well. So they're having certain a lot of issues around activations. And also, when you install the operating system on the phone, one of the last steps is that it checks to make sure that your phone's truly allowed to have this version of the OS installed. And that check was actually failing. Apparently, that was causing a lot of phones to be bricked or to essentially be unusable because it you know, wouldn't actually connect to Apple's service.
Jeez, I feel pretty lucky.
And on that's sort of an outage type event, but one of the other issues that's come out because of iOS 7 is unfettered access to photos with passcodes.
With a very specific sort of technique. Like, you've got to open this one thing from the standby screen and tap the home button in, like, da-da-da or whatever, like, in that sort of pattern. And it doesn't make it any better, but it does make you wonder exactly how did somebody come across this, because these are not steps that I would do.
Normally do.
Well, it's the kind of thing that happens when a new operating system is released. You know, people start to really test the boundaries of it. And, of course, if you're a smart cookie, you realise that there is that new control centre component, which is essentially access to apps, but from an unlocked phone. So you don't need to go through the passcode to look at the calculator app or the clock app.
That's right.
And it's enabled by default, I believe. So there's a certain way you can open up the clock app, for example, go to a certain section, try turning the phone off, then, I don't know, there's a whole step-by-step process, and you can Google it quite easily. It ends up that you can get into the camera app after that. You can also scroll through all the currently open apps. So if you have a certain number of apps that you think is sensitive, you know, maybe you wouldn't want people at work knowing that you have
a certain kind of app. It's one of those apps that we might talk about later, actually.
Yes, possibly. Well, if we have time, we're hoping to get onto certain apps that we'd like to keep anonymous with. So there's already some vulnerabilities come out, and there's already an update, iOS 7.0.1.
Really?
Which has been released to address the problem, but it's only available at this stage for iPhone 5Ss.
Yeah.
So if you're on an old iPhone 5, then you can't get that update as of this morning. So It's a good thing to keep an eye out for any update. There's also a way, if you want to really prevent yourself from having people access your photos, you can disable the control center from your lock screen as well. Which
okay, so there's a workaround.
Reduces functionality, yeah. But it returns it basically to how it worked prior to the update.
Now, Mark, you used to think that iPhones were faster than Android phones, didn't you?
Yes. Every time I've used an Android phone, I've picked it up and I've gone, it's just a bit laggy.
It feels a bit sloppy.
Yeah. And, you know, I always blamed it on the transitions. I always blamed it on those animations.
Yeah.
And how sort of choppy they seem to be compared to always, ever since the 3GS phone of the iPhone as you know, being a little bit faster.
And now there's proof.
Yes.
Somebody has measured the latency on the touchscreen on an iPhone 5,
yes.
iPhone 4, and across a range of Android phones.
Right. Mm.
And iPhone 4 and iPhone 5 is faster than any Android phone out there on the market.
Ding, dang.
So we're talking about the... It's called latency, right? But it's actually when you press on the touchscreen, how long it takes to respond
to that touch. Yeah.
And we're talking in terms of milliseconds here, aren't we? So... What was it? The 5 was...
Around 55 milliseconds.
Right.
The 4 was 85, and the fastest, which was the Samsung S4, in the Android sphere, was 114.
Right, so that's
quite a big difference.
More than double, yeah. Yeah, right.
Any gamer can actually tell you that that's super noticeable. No, yes. For real. No, like, you know, that kind of latency that you get, especially if you play online games, you really see that.
Good point. It's the same sort of measurement that's used in terms of latency over your internet connection, how long it takes for things to respond when you shoot.
Well, that's the thing. If I get a faster response from some game server in the US than I do from a phone, it's I'm not winning with the phone here. Like,
So my bad scores when playing games on my phone is purely because of the phone and not because of me?
Could be.
Wishful thinking.
I'd stick to that.
Blame the phone. I need a new phone.
And one with the fingerprint sensor. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this is something that's inherent with the hardware or inherent to the operating system itself.
Could it be a bit of both?
I reckon it's a bit of both. I mean, it did compare, the 4S and the 5. And there was a difference in speed there.
Yes.
So
hardware has something to play with it?
Must do, yeah. 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 But I think the software is written in a way that, you know, perhaps it's more does certain things around the transitions first before it does something else, which could be a design choice by the operating system.
Yes.
You're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, covering some of the latest in technology news. And if you do want to contact us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427 Joy 949. You can email us, right?
You can, onair@joy.org.au.
Or you could leave a message for Mushin on 1300-JOY-949.
Let's make that phone call.
Yes.
Give Mushin something to do.
Oh.
I'm sure he's busy.
Probably. Thank you, Mushin, for being out there. He's such a dedicated worker, being out on the front desk for us every single Saturday morning.
It's really
afternoon.
Good.
We'll be back with more in a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
It's exactly 12:30 here on Joy 94.9. You're listening to TechnoGaze, and we've got Mark and Michael and myself, I'm Raina, in the studio. We've got some sad news.
Yes. Nintendo president, I'm not going to say the name this time.
Hiroshi Yamauchi.
I want to give him the respect that he deserves, clearly. He was a man responsible for moving Nintendo into the video gaming business.
Yeah, I didn't know this, but Nintendo's been around for a long, long time, from the late 1800s.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, late 1800s. Yeah, and they originally made card games.
Oh, right.
Playing cards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It seems like a fairly natural sort of move into video games.
Yeah.
From that sort of perspective.
It's, you know, that pop whatever's available at the time, I guess, technology-wise, you know. It's all about reading the people's what people actually want to do.
But I think recognising that at a time when, you know, the traditional gaming business was probably, you know, quite lucrative, and moving into something unknown was a fair gamble and a big leap of faith.
Mm. Mm. So he was 85 as he passed away this week. And he ran Nintendo for, 53 years? And
that is a long time. Obviously, but
it's very Japanese, though, right? They always dedicate themselves to their course in life.
Yes, and it probably helped that his grandfather was the one who founded Nintendo,
right? Mm.
So it's, you know, the family business.
53 years, though.
He was also its second largest shareholder.
Yes.
So obviously, quite personally invested in that in a lot of ways.
And of course, for his stint at the company, you know, so many well-known computer game characters were born as part of Nintendo's stable at the time, including Donkey Kong, Super Mario, the Super Mario Brothers game. Of course, Mario is such a prevalent... Like, I even see people dressed up as Mario in the streets of Melbourne playing a guitar. That's how... Yes. prominent that character is.
I saw a young man on the train this morning with a Pokemon tattoo.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's dedication. I think.
He's going to have that.
I hope it's dedication.
If it's a permanent tattoo, that means, you know,
all over his arm.
Really?
Oh, it was huge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, this is how people feel about Nintendo, though. That's such a...
And it's also interesting because it's not so much about the company, but it's about the characters. They actually had this very, you know, this world of their own, right? Nintendo's, you know, the Mario sort of line of things. You've got so many different games that are available in that with those characters, and people really had an attachment to those characters.
Oh, they're a huge brand in their own right.
Yeah. So, of course, the Tetris was another game that's of particular note during his time.
Yeah.
Mm. And the Wii.
And the Wii.
Which I have. I've got one of those. It's my first Nintendo product that I bought. Was the Wii. Oh, of course, actually, no. I had a Donkey Kong handheld flip-open game. You know those ones with the little button batteries that you put in?
Was it a Game & Watch?
Oh, no. No, I didn't have that one.
My granddad had a Octopus Game & Watch.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, I was in love with it. That was my first Nintendo.
It's good to be to remember things about...
I'll just go home and play with my Tamagotchi then.
Now, moving on, of course, some other recent news. The Leap Motion, of course, is a device that is sort of like the Kinect. So Microsoft's Kinect... device, which sits on top of your TV when you're playing an Xbox 360. It allows you to move your hands around and gestures, and it recognizes those as certain gestures in the games.
Yep.
So you can be very physical when you're playing certain games.
That's right.
Now, the Leap Motion brings that to the PC world, and it's gone one step further now.
Yeah, Leap Motion released their product, I think, about 5 or 6 weeks ago. Hmm. And I've had a bit of a play with it, and it's cool. I haven't found the perfect app for it yet, but it is quite cool. But now HP are building it into a line of notebooks.
That's
that they've released.
Actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and the controller itself is probably the size of a flat piece of chewing gum. You know, so it's that thin and that size. So it's pretty small.
And it just runs off USB, right?
Well, my one plugs in as USB, but the one on the HP is
embedded into
the machine.
Wow.
So you don't have to worry about, oh, where do I position it? It's always positioned in the same spot.
One of the things with touch being such a prominent feature these days in a lot of... It's starting to happen in even laptops now.
Mm.
The issues that are born from that are such that, you know, you get fingerprints on the screen and all sorts of, you know,
yes.
gunk, and it looks quite dirty. Without that, without the need to actually physically touch the screen, that's actually quite a good thing, in my opinion. Like, it can, you know, alleviate some of our concerns.
And I can think of lots of applications. You know, you take your car to be serviced these days and they use computers to perform diagnostic checks, and if you're a mechanic with greasy hands, you don't want to touch the screen.
Of
so
course.
You can wave your fingers in front of it and do all the things that you need to do.
Cooking is another one.
Yeah.
You'd be in the kitchen and you want to... go to the next page of the recipe, but you can't because you've got dough all over your hands.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, and if you have an RSI or something like that, depending on the, you know, the state of your wrists or whatever, you know, maybe you would feel more comfortable doing that rather than actually gripping a mouse and moving it around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll put a photo up on our Facebook page about the Leap Motion, and you'll be able to see what it looks like on the screen.
Yeah.
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 It's pretty cool.
We've got our own device.
we've got the Joy Leap Motion device.
What else is news in the new products services space this week?
Google's got a new company.
Oh yes.
And there's not a great deal of information about it, but it's called Calico, and it's all about dealing with health and aging.
Okay, because Google have been musing about the idea of online medical records for quite some time. They've tried to, you know, team up with certain government agencies to provide that sort of service, but a lot of the pushback on that has been around the fact of privacy and, you know, not wanting to have the likes of Google with their very vast advertising network associated to them.
Don't you want to see the hemorrhoid cream ad?
I don't know why I would see the hemorrhoid cream ad. What are you talking about?
Oh, sorry, was that told in confidence?
Yeah, so they've gone a slightly different approach now. Instead of them offering just a Google medical service, they're opening up this new company called Calico. Is it to offer a medical record service, or what's the sort of
well,
go?
They haven't really said too much about it. It's pretty much...
I think it's any sort of research into using technology to promote health, well-being, extended life, that type of thing. You know, Sergey and Larry obviously want to live forever, and this is perhaps their way of doing it.
Well, maybe that's it.
Yes.
They've noticed a few grey hairs, a few crow's feet around the eyes, something like that, thinking, geez, what should we do with our riches?
So it's an R&D type...
I think so, yeah. It's a long-term investment. It's not something that I think will bear fruit in the next 2 or 3 years, but it's something they're looking much further down the track with.
I wonder if it will be, you know, will it be supported by ads?
Oh, my goodness, who knows? Now, there's a story in Time magazine that is actually all about this thing, and there's loads and loads of detail in there.
Right.
Larry Page reckons, yeah, it will take about 10 or 20 years for an idea that they have now to actually
come to
show
fruition.
Up. So,
yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
And
not for a while.
To pull away the cynical side of things, I think that it's good that there are people who are prepared to invest in the long term.
Yeah, yeah, and you see that with you know Bill Gates and his work in you know research of malaria, for example.
Yeah.
And he's always taken an approach of we've got to fix all these problems that exist today. You know, we really just need to throw research and money at it to make it work and make it happen in a very sort of widely distributable way.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that Google, because there's been some shots back and forth of, you know, oh, we don't need, what was it? What was the line? We don't need airships with
balloons,
Wi-Fi.
Balloons with Wi-Fi. That was Bill Gates actually that said that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
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 And I can understand that. I personally feel better about the fact that Google is putting their vast resources and thought into, you know, things that actually affect people.
Real-world problems.
About health and stuff.
There is a big distinction. I think, you know, what Bill Gates is doing is purely philanthropic. What I think Google is doing is something that's going to be good for us as Google and to make a dollar out of it.
Yes.
But at least they've got the long-term vision to do it, because many companies only focus on what can I get out of it in the next 6 months or by the next reporting quarter.
I think as well, Bill Gates has practically retired, right? He's almost, you know, finished up his stint in the technology world, so he's trying to show that he is a decent human being and put his money back. So it's at that stage of his life, I guess, where he's kind of said, okay, well, I've done all this work.
Yeah, he's where I start.
Yeah.
Well, start. He's been doing it for ages, but you know, he's where I'm putting things back.
Yes. Yeah. Now, if you have anything to say during the show today, you can text us 0427JOY949. You can also tweet us at TechnoGaze, TechnoGaze. And one last one for this part of the show, BlackBerry.
BlackBerry. Yes. Couple of bits of news about BlackBerry.
Poor old BlackBerry. They're
remember them?
Yeah.
Well, do you remember them from the other week when we talked about them? Yeah, but...
A pop quiz was launched at the place I work at during the week, and they asked, oh, who's not on an iPhone these days? And it was a loaded question because that's, you know, the phone that's been offered by the company at the time. And two people shot their hands up in great gusto. And it was because they had a BlackBerry device. They still hold on to their BlackBerry devices and they love it.
Well, I do love the BlackBerry keyboard. And I miss a proper keyboard.
And didn't you say the other week as well, Michael, that it's still really popular in places like Indonesia and
oh yeah, in Asia, BlackBerry is really, really popular.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of it has to do is the all you can eat data plans that BlackBerry seems to attract with the telcos.
Yeah,
which is very good because at least you know it caps the costs, and also from a roaming perspective, it caps the costs too.
Yeah.
If you do go out of the country, but BlackBerry, you know, one of the main reasons why they're so popular is because of their Messenger app.
Yes.
And they have just announced, and it's going to be released today, in fact, US time, that BlackBerry Messenger for iOS and Android is going to be available.
So you'll be able to communicate with any BlackBerry user from your iPhone or Android device.
That's right. Now, it's not on the Google Play Store at the moment. I just had a look.
Yep.
But I expect sort of when we hit midnight US time that should become available.
Mm.
But I think it's great, but it's probably about 2 or 3 years too late.
Right. Because I guess it's a way of them, you know, holding on to customers that might be on the BlackBerry service. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely something to hold on to.
Yeah. Now, on the sadder news for BlackBerry, they're looking to lay off a large number of their workforce.
And by large, we mean 4,500.
Yeah, about 40%. Wow.
That is massive.
Huge.
And they've obviously ceased trading as of yesterday, US time as well.
Yeah, temporarily they were halted on the stock exchange.
That's right, because it's obviously pretty destructive news for any company.
Yeah.
Now, we have a message. I think it's Sarah.
We do have something from Sarah.
For messaging in, Sarah, talking about her Galaxy and touch-free scrolling that's available on the Galaxy. And, of course, that helps her, decided to use it for a recipe to avoid sticky finger issues. Still managed to drip all,
all over my screen.
Sarah needs Elite Motion.
Sometimes no end of impressive technology can make up for being dopey. Now, I'm not sure that's true.
Might need to put a plastic cover over the phone as well.
I think if you're not dripping things on, you know, the bench or whatever, then you're not cooking properly. So.
Or on the floor.
Over your face.
On that note, you're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We're covering some of the latest in technology, and we'll be back with a bit more of that in a few moments. TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9.
Go on, Mark.
The giggle hour.
The gayest station in the nation. That's what we are.
We are.
The giggliest station in the nation as well. Perhaps. For at least this period of time. Now, what else have we got this week?
Telstra's been wrapped over the knuckles.
Yes.
By ACMA. Who are ACMA?
ACMA are our communication authority. They're the ones that say what ratings get applied to our TV shows and to our games as well.
Oh.
And they also are the authority on any laws associated to communicating. So, effectively, Joy is kind of...
Falls under the banner.
Falls under a lot of legislation and laws that are enforced by ACMA.
So what did Telstra do?
They overcharged...
They overcharged at least 260,000, over a quarter of a million customers for international data roaming over a period of about 6 years.
And we're talking, $30 million, which is pretty high. Now, the overcharging was caused by international carriers and a contracted data clearing house that they used, sending incorrect data information to Telstra. So data usage information, if you went roaming around the world, this particular contractor, this data clearing house was providing the incorrect information back to Telstra and causing overcharging.
So some people will get some money back, do you think?
I believe that it's been already rectified. So it happened from 2006 to 2012, and I do recall last year there was an announcement by Telstra saying, "Hey, we found this problem. Right. We need to
give you some
hand
money
back, some money." Of course, that's not the end of it though, because ACMA actually pulled them up on it, and the reason they pulled them up for it is that in the first place, Telstra failed to investigate and identify the problems even after a certain small number of customers complained in early 2009. Now, Chris Cheer, from ACMA and said in a statement that while they had a very small amount, small number of complaints, they didn't try to look to see whether there was a systemic problem. However, he said that once Telstra realised there was a problem, they acted on it fairly quickly and tried to rectify it and move to compensate customers. So they've dealt with it in a fairly good way. Now, only a warning was issued this time around by the Communications Authority because Telstra was not the original cause of the problem, and they were the ones to actually report the problem to ACMA as well. So,
okay. Is
this, Telstra being a relatively good citizen in the communication space? They're trying to shake off this persona of being big behemoth corporate,
and they've been trying for a while. I don't know how successful. Well, I think they've been a little bit successful.
Yeah, there's certain, you see their interactions online with Twitter and the like, and they do actively respond. How well they respond is another thing again.
And I mean the store experience is so different as well. You know, people are a lot more casually dressed. They seem a lot friendlier. I don't know if that's just perception
comparatively to previous incarnations of their retail experience.
Yeah, they have been. I walked into a Telstra store this week and, it was a really pleasant experience. Mm.
And they have, Telstra-owned branded stores. There's none of this tea shop sort of franchise approach anymore. It's actually sort of
The Apple Store type of experience. Yeah.
I suspect they took a lot of their cues from Apple, perhaps. But on the telco front overseas now, and there's a Belgian telco called, what is it called?
Belgacom.
It's very, very good accent there. I'm really bad with the overseas pronunciations. It's more of
I sound like I'm making fun if I try to do the accent, so I'm not going to do it.
It's a confidence thing more than anything else when talking in other languages, right? You don't want to sound like you're an idiot, so you just don't.
Yeah, so Belgacom have had a number of servers and workstations infected with a fairly complex virus.
Very malicious complex.
Software. Yes.
That's not even just, random Russian kid in his
No script kiddies here.
No. This apparently looks bad enough to have come from an agency.
Yes, and there are rumours around saying that it either came from Britain's GCHQ or from the American NSA. So this was reported in the Belgian newspaper De Standard, and they said that possibly phone data going back 2 years, and they haven't really clarified what phone data was, whether it was the actual conversation or the metadata, and it's most likely to be the metadata, was hacked, and that the target may have been traffic going to Syria or Yemen.
Wow. This begs the question, is it, putting the legalities aside, because these kind of organisations or these agencies seem to be above the law in so many respects, but from an ethical point of view, is it okay for such an agency to hack, as in essentially break the law or, break confidence in systems to, obtain information randomly across the board on telco?
We quite rightly crack it when they do it with the full agreement of our telcos.
Mm. But they're taking it one step further, though, now, right?
Actually breaking in is pretty bad.
Yeah. And again, back to the whole ethics of it. Okay, sure, you might consider these agencies to be, the bastions of freedom, the bastions of good in the world, but what happens if they're not? What happens if there's a turning point where they become not so good? What happens if there's people within those organisations who are not as
can't be trusted as much and as ethical themselves in the use of the data that is then available to them?
Yeah.
Trouble with ethics is I think it's very much a perspective thing. So it may be ethical from my perspective as the person wanting to stop the terrorist attack, but it's perhaps not ethical from the innocent person who's had their traffic monitored.
Yes. Yeah. You've got a certain level of trust when you look at your phone. And it's completely gone out the window for me in the last year or so. Even, I kind of consider Facebook to be, within my own friendship network, but everything I post anywhere on the internet now is simply, it's just assumed that it can be tracked back to me and it will be, it could be used in the future for nefarious purposes.
It's a little bit like you're standing on the street corner with a megaphone and telling your secrets to the world and hoping that only the right people will listen to it.
Only the people passing by are the ones, which are your friends, who just happen to be the ones that are hearing. Yeah.
So, you know, everybody says, assume that whatever you put online is going to go to anywhere and you can't go wrong.
I was actually, and we'll hopefully do this next week, I was doing a bit of an analysis against bringing this back to home a little bit. A few of the online dating apps, Grindr, Jacked, all those kind of apps, Gaydar even, or whatever, and looking at the types of organisations that they use to track information as
analytics and things,
there's certain analytical services that are available that would have so much information about the apps that I use on my phone, because they're all used by this, you know, every single app uses the same analytics service.
Yes.
So there's a whole bunch of information there, which is all in one single place that could potentially be used. But we'll talk about that hopefully next week, because it's a really meaty topic to get into, I think.
It's pretty fascinating.
Now, hey, guess what?
What?
3D printing.
Oh, why don't you do this one, Mark?
you've got a 3D printer, don't you, Michael?
I do.
You do? Yes. it's pretty cool. It kind of does its thing.
It is cool. I'm still trying to work out what I can use it for. You know, I've printed the little toy octopus and the little toy cat, and that was good.
So we did a pickup of four 3D printing technologies that could solve current day problems. Now,
And that's because there's a big conference happening in San Jose at the moment.
Ah, right.
Yes.
Good. Good to hear. Printing houses?
There is this fantastic video on YouTube about contour printing.
Right.
So if anybody wants to Google contour 3D printing, you see this very large printhead laying down these layers of concrete to form walls. And as part of the video, there's the animation of building a whole house with this mega 3D printer that looks like basically a crane that moves up and down and goes around. And it's amazing.
So it's 3D printing on a massive scale?
On a massive scale, yeah.
Right.
So it's not like your traditional 3D printer where you print a very fine bit of plastic. Here you're laying down maybe a 2 centimetre by 2 centimetre thick bit of concrete.
Right.
That obviously is hard enough so that structurally the thing won't collapse.
Yes,
and
pretty quick.
Yeah, and what you see in the video is it prints these two parallel walls and with some like windy S bits in between to hold to tie everything together so it doesn't collapse on itself.
Right.
So that's pretty fantastic. There's a another technology they're looking at is using paper instead of plastic.
Ah, okay.
To print. Now, I think
Are we talking about, like, paper? Because, you know, back at school I did the recycling of paper thing where you get, what, two bits of grey metal or
what it was. You soak your paper and press it and stuff like that.
Mash it up and all that sort of thing.
It's not quite like that. What it is printing on traditional paper using special ink.
Okay.
And then what happens is that the various layers of paper are bound together by the printer, so essentially with glue, and then it cuts the outline out.
All right.
Now, I think the application is limited because obviously you don't want to get this paper thing wet.
Yes.
But from a prototyping perspective, it has a lot of pluses. And there's a photograph there of an iPhone, of all things, that was created in paper, and it looks like a real iPhone because you've got colours, because you can print in colours on the ink on
so
the paper.
So it solves a lot of the problems plastic printing, which, A, it's a costly affair. Like, how much is it for the plastic?
Something I think it's $30 a kilo.
Wow.
Okay. Which will add up. Mm. Yeah.
And also being able to colour it as you see fit, because it is just paper. It just would require ink, I guess, to do it.
And two other quick things was printing of satellite replacement parts.
Oh, okay.
So that if you are up in the space station and something breaks, you don't need to wait for a shuttle to come.
Just print
with
your
replacement.
Own.
Print your own, yeah.
Hmm.
And the last one is printing of human tissue. So that's something that I think's really, there's a lot of work going on. And in fact, there's a company that's expected to sell liver tissue to pharmaceuticals by the end of next year so they can do some toxicology tests on it.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. So print your own heart.
It's a big,
Maybe.
Rather than wearing it on your sleeve.
Larry and Sergey can make use of this in their goal for immortality.
Yes, that's right.
That may be part of their approach. Maybe they're looking into 3D printing. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We're covering some of the latest in technology news. It's 4 minutes to one, so we are coming to the end of the hour, but we'll have a quick wrap-up of the show in a few moments.
TechnoGiz.
This is TechnoGiz here on Joy 94.9.
What's time, Mr. Wolf?
It's 2 minutes to one.
Oh.
We're almost out of time. Oh, no. But very quickly, I think you had some exciting stuff to mention at the end of the show, Michael. Your case.
My new telephone case.
Yes.
For my S4. Now, how do you describe this? It's basically one of these wraparound cases that's got a lid that opens and closes, but it's got a little Perspex window.
Right.
And it must have a magnet in it, because when you close it, the phone knows that you've closed the case, and it shows the time in the little Perspex window.
Wow.
But more importantly is when you get an inbound call, or if you get a diary reminder, you can dismiss it or answer the call or hang up the call in the little Perspex window without opening the
case. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's a case, but not quite a case.
That's right. It's dual purpose. Nice, yeah. And the good thing is, because you replace the back and the front,
yes.
I've now gone from a white phone to a much darker carbon grey.
Lovely.
Yes.
You're just trying to upstage this iPhone 5 thing, aren't you?
But I do like the fingerprint reader.
It is pretty great.
Yes.
That's all we have time for today. If you missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is a Join Your News Bulletin with Matt Thompson, fist pumping right now. And after that will be Cravings with Joe. Joe Pryor today, taking up cravings while Peter's away. Have a good weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.